What's up, Funicle?
Are you recording?
Non-fungible associates?
Non-fungible associates.
What's up, fungal associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson, and I am alongside, as always, the indomitable Casey Clapp.
Thank you, Alex. I appreciate being indomitable.
I actually don't know if I know what indomitable means.
I honestly don't know if I do either.
Well, it's for another time, Casey.
You know what I usually like to think of is indefatigable.
Indefatigable.
Yeah, it's basically like you can't be fatigued. You're tireless.
Oh.
Yeah, indefatigable. Yeah, it's like some big generals, like indefatigable.
I always
keep pushing. Yeah. At least that's how I've always thought about it.
Indefatigable.
And I feel like there might be like a name of a ship somewhere that's like the Indefatigable.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I don't know. I could also be not knowing, just like you. There's just these big words that are complicated to say.
This could all be true or it could all be false.
Yeah, yeah. Who's to know?
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to our show. Casey.
We got a big episode today, Alex.
We do. We don't even have any time to screw around.
Yeah, let's give it 10 seconds. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm also good.
Wonderful.
That took us like four. That was great. We had time to spare.
We're so efficient. Yeah. Today, we are talking about a tree, as we are every week. And this week, the tree is the koa.
Oh, my God.
Oa, my koa. Casey, how many Hawaiian trees have we covered? Mango?
I guess trees that can grow in Hawaii, more specifically.
Maybe endemic trees. Is this our first endemically Hawaiian tree?
No, we did cover the sandalwood.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
And I thought that was Indian.
Well, there are a couple different species.
Oh, right.
So
okay.
There definitely is a native species to Hawaii.
Got it.
But allegedly, they've all been cut down. So a lot of them are coming back for the sandalwood. But yeah, this is certainly one that there are other kinds of it that grow elsewhere because, you know, it's an acacia. Acacia koa is the scientific name.
That's right.
So it is endemic, this exact species. And we're going to talk so much about that. It's honestly blows my mind.
Wow, but a reasonable amount.
Yeah, it's going to be thick and thorough and quite enjoyable, our entire discussion about the koa and Hawaii. Man. So I think this will be our second Hawaiian tree.
What a great poll quote for our podcast.
What?
Thick, thorough, and enjoyable.
Oh, please. Oh, we need that on the front of, I don't know, what magazines are people reading these days about podcasts?
Ooh, none.
Okay, we got to get this on Spotify then. We can rent a banner.
It'll be like a rotating banner with like a carousel. And okay, it'll be like Lil Nas X, Billie Eilish. Completely arbitrary.
Oh, but as long as we spell the thick with two C's, I think people would be like, okay, yeah. What is this about? Let's click on this.
And that'll grow our audience.
Yeah, do you think it would? It would grow them in a few different ways. Whoa!
That was very good, Casey.
For work. Thank you, Alex.
Well, Casey, let's talk koa.
Oh, let's do it. So the reason we're doing this today is, in fact, a piggyback off of our most, I guess it's not our most recent, it's a couple weeks past, episode on the brewer's spruce, you recall?
Yes, we talked about endemism in that episode.
Exactly.
And if you're listening for the first time, for something to be endemic means that it only grows and is only found naturally in one place.
Exactly. Some place that has some kind of boundary.
Yeah.
And when we talked with Michael, we were talking about a tree. For those of you also, if you're just checking in, Michael Kaufman's an author that has written a couple of my favorite books and is all about the Klamath Mountains. So
yeah.
We chatted with him and discussed exactly what it means to be endemic, specifically in the Klamath Mountains of Northern California and Southern Oregon.
Yes.
Now, in that case, the tree of our choosing was the brewer spruce, which is what they call a paleo-endemic species.
Very, very old.
Exactly. And it means that it used to have a much wider range, and now that range is restricted to only one spot.
I think I know where you're going with this, Casey.
Where are we going with
this? Is the koa a neo-endemic tree?
Yes, it is. Is
means
Alex,
that it's just a younger tree.
Smooth, baby. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a younger tree in a strict sense, but you're probably, I think that's that's an accurate statement, but it doesn't quite give the real definition. A neoendemic is a plant species that arose more recently through isolation and divergence from its parent lineage. So it
Casey's reading that off a cue card.
No, I'm not, Alex. It's completely not true. Okay. But yes, Alex, essentially you are right. It is a tree that has been isolated more recently, but not because it has reduced its wherever it used to be growing.
Yeah.
It just got isolated genetically due to some reason.
Okay.
And now it's just there.
It doesn't have anything to do with its geological age.
Yeah, I'm trying to like really go over that in my mind. I think it might some point.
It's tricky because the word paleo.
Yeah.
I meant to believe that that's old, right?
Right, exactly. And neo literally means new.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think honestly, you're probably right, but I'm not sure that it's like so fundamentally definitional
okay.
about it. But I think it might be one of those things like, yes, also that is true.
Okay.
Before we get too far, I want to give a little bit of context about where we're talking about. Hawaii.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people are native from Hawaii. They have an amazing culture and an amazing language, and I'm just right off the bat, if I get any of this wrong, I'm very sorry.
We'll do our best.
We're going to do our best.
I have a couple friends from Hawaii.
Yeah.
And I don't know if our friend Daphne,
yes.
who made the mango mochi last
yep.
year,
yep.
I don't know if she still listens to the show, but the stakes are high for me.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Because if I want Daphne to be able to listen to this and not bristle at any of it.
And not wince every time we say something wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, we can do this, Alex. Yeah. I believe in you. And you also, I believe, have a way better grasp on language than I do.
That's nice to say.
It's been something you've repeated multiple times in this show where I would say something and you would say it better all the time. Like if it's like
pronunciation.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like you can look at it and your brain, for whatever reason, I think is just better at it than I am.
Interesting.
Maybe the only exception to that, if it is a rule, is saying like Latin names of plants.
Yeah, big time.
I got that on lock.
For sure.
Yeah, but anytime you're like, oh, here's how you say Peiwen. I'm like, oh, I was going to say Pawan. There's something completely absurdly ridiculous.
I appreciate that compliment, Casey.
Of course.
I do love language.
You're very good at it.
Thank you.
So here's some quick facts. The koa is Hawaii's second most common tree after the Oia Lahua.
What is that tree? What is
The scientific name is Meteroceteris polymorpha.
What in the world?
It's just this amazing tree. It's in the myrtle family.
Myrtle.
And yeah, it's a O with a flat line, H-I apostrophe A, L-E-H-U-A. And that is the most common tree on all of the islands. And the second most is our koa. Also, I should note there are two different species of koa. One is the one we're talking about, which is Acacia koa. The other one is Acacia koaia, which is kind of a smaller, harder wooded, but more diminutive tree. It doesn't grow quite to the size of the tree that we're using today.
Okay. It's like a little, is a different species.
Yeah, different species. Different species entirely.
Related entirely as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, closely related. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Now, here's the other thing. Hawaii's tallest tree is the koa, 115 feet tall.
Damn.
Yeah, so it's the tallest of all the trees that grow in this little island archipelago.
This is shaping up to be a good one.
Another thing, I'm going to say archipelago rather than archipelago.
Oh, I've only heard archipelago.
Okay, archipelago. Archipelago?
Archipelago.
Okay, I'm going to say archipelago.
Instead of archipelago?
Yeah.
Wait. Archipelago?
So what was I saying earlier, Alex?
That's okay. Like, aren't you glad I, like, aren't you archipelago?
Archipelago, I didn't
banana.
Say.
Banana.
Okay, here's the next one. It grows extremely fast on good sites, about 30 feet in 5 years. Isn't that insane?
Well, you got that volcanic soil over there, Casey.
Yeah, and apparently they love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Like the tomatoes of Vesuvius.
Yes, those lovely tomatoes. I really want to know what the tomatoes of Mount Vesuvius are like.
San Marzano tomatoes, the most famous tomatoes in the world.
Really?
They grow in that volcanic soil, and that's where you get that taste.
I absolutely had no idea.
Is it Vesuvius?
Yeah, I think so. There's also like Mount Etna over there.
Yeah, I think Vesuvius is the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So the next one is the Hawaiian Islands are the most isolated large islands in the world.
Hmm.
Now, this is something that I'm sure a bunch of other people will be like, meh, not really. And they'll have some other measure. But this is specifically for large islands. And this is from a book that's called Hawaiian Heritage Plants. This is where I got this fact.
Okay.
It's about 2,000 miles from the Americas and Alaska and from Japan. And it's about 5,000 miles from either the Philippines or Australia.
Dang.
Now, I want to make sure that everyone's listening to these facts because at least a few of them are going to come up later. Or rather, you'll be like, wait, I'm sorry. How far away is it? And then you'll be like, oh my God.
We're planting the seeds here.
Exactly. We're planting little koa seeds.
Nice.
Scarify them a little bit and they'll grow.
that statistic makes me really wonder at the fact that people were able to get over there in the first place.
Right?
That's amazing.
And they got there, they think, about 1,600 years ago. That's so amazing. People have been on Hawaii for that long.
Wow.
So 1,600 years ago, people came over on canoes, 2,000 miles of bare ocean, and they happened to find this one small, which is, you know, it's not small, it's a big island.
It's literally called the Big Island.
Isn't that amazing, though? Yeah, it really blows your mind. Now, if people can do that, then all the other things had to also do that. And because they're so far away from everything else, it's hard for you to like think about how often this happens.
Yeah.
But then once it happens, that's kind of it.
Hmm.
So 90% of the native flora of Hawaii is found nowhere else on Earth.
Ooh, this is not an Australia situation, right? Where it broke off and
Exactly.
had to evolve on its own.
Precisely. So the difference that you're bringing up, Australia used to be connected, so plants came down and were all kind of together.
Yeah.
Then it broke off and then they were isolated.
Okay.
Hawaii literally bubbled up from the ground. So
okay.
It has never been connected to anything. At least, you know, maybe there was a volcano that was connected, you know, millions and millions and millions of years ago.
But at this point, that's completely removed.
Exactly. Yeah. Now it's been in the ocean for millions and millions of years.
Wow.
And so the oldest island that is out right now is Kauai, and its age is about 5.1 million years.
Damn.
So that's as long as it's been here.
Oh, that's young.
That's young. It's extremely young.
Yeah.
And so 2% came from air currents, like spores of mosses and ferns and things like that.
Oh, interesting.
25% came via ocean currents or like on rafts is kind of the term where like, let's say a big chunk of like a tree with a bunch of other things, you know, all kind of just breaks off of an island because of erosion or something in a big storm. And then it kind of floats to the next place. That's a possibility, or literally a tiny little fruit or a big fruit like a coconut lands in the water, bobs there for a couple years or however long, goes on the currents, lands on the seashore, becomes a new, you know, colonizer of this new earth that has nothing else on it.
Cool.
So all of this is paled in comparison to what birds do. 50% of the native flora came via a bird traveling from point A to point B, point B being Hawaii.
Through its feces?
One or the other.
Carrying
could
it in its beak?
Swallowed it, and it was just stuck in its digestional tract for a while.
Yeah.
Apparently, some seeds stay there for like 2 weeks or more.
50%.
50%.
Wow.
Other times, it gets caught, like you're saying, in the mud, in its feathers or on its feet, something like that.
The bird killer? Remember that guy?
Exactly,
catcher?
So I would have to look it up. I should have. I'm a fool.
Oh, then why do you say this?
I'm not sure that I looked up if the Posonia grows here or if there is a Posonia species that grows in Hawaii. So
we'll figure it out when we cover Lehua.
Yes, precisely. So that is the quick primer of some interesting facts about Hawaii. It is truly an astounding ecological place for all you just name it. And honestly, if there was an opportunity to go see what Hawaii was like before the colonists came over, like the Portuguese and the English and all these other people, that would have been such an interesting thing to have people live there for well over 1,000 years and develop and bring their Polynesian cultures over to Hawaii. Like, it's a fascinating thing.
It seems like a very special place, Casey. I've never been. I would like to someday in a responsible manner.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, maybe if we, maybe if you go buy some t-shirts at arbitrarypod.com.
Oh my gosh.
Casey and I won't be able to afford to go to Hawaii.
We can go to Hawaii. We promise it's a work trip, you guys.
Yes.
We promise.
Oh my God. If we could record episodes from Hawaii, come on.
Alex, we can record episodes anywhere.
It's true. We got a mobile setup
here.
Yeah,
we can do this.
Hey, we have lots more to say.
Yes, we do.
About the COA, but we got to take a quick break first. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today, we're talking the COA of Hawaii.
That's right.
Casey, we've got some... I'm really excited for this one. I love anything... Any tree to do with a tropical space.
You are a tropical boy, aren't you?
I'm a tropical boy. You're a conifer man. Yeah. I'm a tropical boy.
Yeah, that's fair.
Even though I've never been to the tropics.
But they look amazing.
I just love the concept.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's all right. I also adore the concept, but I've been there a few times to a few different tropics.
Yeah.
But they look so much nicer on TV.
Sure.
Because it's not like 90 degrees and 90% humidity all the time.
Covered in mosquitoes.
Yeah. So it's nice to see things happening and be like, wow, that looks so beautiful. And imagine it's like a nice 60 degree day. There's maybe 40% humidity. You're feeling good. And you're watching all these interesting monkeys fly through these tropical trees. I wish that would be the case. So
yeah.
I think we're going to have a rude awakening when we get there.
Hey, if VR keeps getting better and better,
oh yeah, that's
we'll be
right.
able to do it someday,
okay.
Case.
Sounds good. So we are today talking about Acacia koa, which is known as the koa tree. Now, a quick little bit about this tree. It's endemic, as we said, to Hawaii. In the major islands of Hawaii, Molokai, Maui, Lanai, Oahu, and Kauai. It is, as we already noted, the tallest growing tree in Hawaii. Can get up to like 35 meters, 115 feet tall. Or if you plant it in the streets in less perfect places, usually it's like 50 to 60, maybe up to 80 feet like that.
That's still pretty big.
It's still a pretty huge tree. You would think that it would be the same size as all the other trees, but apparently it's just head and shoulders above many other trees that are native to this little island chain.
Sweet.
Now, it grows not at the very base of these beaches and things. It prefers, and this is kind of a unique thing, to grow. It's not unique, but it's an important note. They do not grow below about 300 or so feet. They can grow all the way up to 7,500 feet.
Dang.
So they grow at those higher and mid elevations up the slopes of all these giant big canyons and mountains on these islands.
And you said 7,000 something?
Yeah, 7,500 feet.
I did a quick Google for context. Uh-huh. The highest peak on Hawaii is 13,796 feet.
God, that's just amazing.
So this is like an alpine tree.
It is. Yeah. Yeah, it basically is. Or maybe it's like I would say it's a subalpine tree.
That's what I meant to say, okay, Casey.
Yeah.
Honestly.
I believe
we just
you.
Talked about this and
we did.
Yeah.
But I'm not trying to say you're misrepresenting it. I'm saying I just think once you get up to higher, I think there's actually like trees that are like the tropical cool trees, which is always wild to me to think about.
We need to cover one of those stats.
Yeah, we have to go see what they are first.
Oh, yes.
So, yes. Yeah,
Arbitrarypod.com/merch.
Please send us to Hawaii so we can cover Hawaii trees. So it's a big tree that grows in the mountains and does not, and I say this again, grow below about 300 or 400 feet. So you're not going to find it washing up on shore and growing there. So they're like, they know this tree, like everything else in Hawaii, came from somewhere, because Hawaii at one point did not exist. It was underneath the water. It was a big mountain that has blown up over time.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to say, okay, we can deduce that this did not float here. We also know that it is a tree in the Fabaceae, which is the pea family.
Yeah.
So it has little pea pods. Aww. And those little pea pods have little tiny black seeds in them. And those adorable little black seeds do not like to be in salt water. They will hit salt water and they will be, and they'll just die.
Explode.
Yeah, they don't like it. They will not grow. They will not take being submerged and then replanted. They will just go kaput. So you have these lovely little pea pods, and the pea pods grow with the peas horizontally in the pea pod. And if you're trying to figure out the difference between our koa, which is Acacia koa, and the other one, which is Acacia koia.
I think I know.
What is it?
Acacia koa is bigger.
Well, the other thing, in case you couldn't tell, if they were baby trees and you just saw the fruit,
yeah,
the Acacia koa has the peas inside, with quotes, that are facing end to end. So they're not horizontal.
Koia? Wait.
Yeah, it's Acacia, and it's spelled K-O-A-I-A.
Yes.
Koa.
Koia. We'll call it little koa.
Yeah, little koa and big koa.
Yeah, let's do that for now.
There we go. So our big koa, it also does one of the most fascinating things that stunned me, Alex.
Do tell, wow.
So, the leaves.
Wow.
They are alternately arranged down the stem, like most everything in the pea family.
Okay.
The leaves, however, are not real. They're a trick.
They're a trick.
Juvenile trees make small little leaves. They're normal size leaves, but they're covered with bipinnately compound leaflets.
Okay.
So a bipinnately compound leaf, of course, as we all know, has one main stem or one main petiole coming out. And then that breaks into small petioles, which then are covered with tiny little leaflets. So think a black walnut, mm-hmm. but each one of the black walnut leaflets is also broken down into leaflets, right?
Right.
However, when this tree gets to a certain age, it stops producing the leaflets entirely.
Okay.
No more official leaf. And it turns into a phyllode.
Phyllode.
Yeah, you ever heard of that?
I don't think so.
It's amazing.
Casey has got a big grin on his face.
It is, Alex, it is not even a leaf. It is a modified petiole or rachis, which is a rachis.
Whoa.
Is that mid vein kind of that is exposed. And it flattens out and has like three or four long veins that are going up it.
Okay.
And it looks like a eucalyptus leaf.
But it is not a leaf.
It is not a leaf. Here is it. Here's an example.
Yeah.
So the small little leaflets, those are the leaves. Those are the entire things. Those are the compound leaves.
Yeah.
That sickle-shaped, long leaf-looking thing,
yeah,
is actually just the stem tissue, the petiole that flattens out and does all the rest of the photosynthesizing.
So the leaflets,
yeah,
those are only on juvenile trees?
Correct.
And then what, eventually they lose those?
Yeah, as the tree ages, uh-huh. Like, I mean, over maybe a year or two, the tree just stops producing the leaflets entirely.
It's like a leaf transformation.
Yeah, exactly. And you can see this in situ, where you can see a big, long petiole that has widened and turned itself into what is essentially a leaf, but technically a phyllode. And then at the very end, you see these little like poofs of little leaflets coming out because it's not quite decided to make the transition yet.
Very like curious.
The petiole has made its transition, but it's like those the emperor penguins that you can see the little babies. They're covered in this adorable little fur, and then you see the juveniles that aren't quite adults that have like the slick penguin fur or penguin feathers.
Yeah,
and with like these little tufts of little like
mottled
baby, yes, you know, feathers. That's kind of what it looks like.
Wow.
Isn't that just out of this world?
Can you think of another tree that does something like that?
I can, but it'll give away the rest of this.
Oh, okay.
But it turns out a bunch of the acacias down in Australia do this. Like, okay. It's a very common thing for acacias.
It's an acacia thing.
Yeah. Now,
it's like Targaryens marrying each other.
Yes, it is.
The acacias do this weird leaf thing.
Exactly. It's the same thing as a Targaryen marrying each other.
Yeah.
It's just what they do, man. Okay? just let them be themselves. Gross.
It's as normal as a Targaryen incest, you guys. Everybody relax.
Everyone just relax. Honestly, I want to know what I'm supposed to be visually imagining your scene as you're making that excuse to somebody. Oh, man. So then we have to talk about the flowers as well.
Yeah.
These little yellow puffballs.
Got some puffballs.
Now, you recall we've talked about a couple different Vachellias.
I was going to say the umbrella thorn.
Yeah.
This has umbrella thorn puffballs.
It totally is. It's got it. It's got it all.
Yeah.
They're very closely related. You'll recall when we did the mimosa thorn that they had switched the names up, where all of these things used to be acacia.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, honestly, these just aren't acacias anymore. We have to change these. So they used to be all in the same genus, the Vachellia and acacia, but now they are switched.
Right.
Rather, I guess, go listen to that episode, everyone. You'll understand why I just said switched. It's a bit of a fun one. You know, it's real fun.
Unlike most of our episodes, it's a bit of a fun one.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you. So that's like the thing about this tree. The bark, though, is kind of the last thing that really should be noted.
Okay.
I'm just kind of like, I keep remembering all these other things. Obviously, there's like several attributes we always cover, but each one in and of themselves is something that I feel is like just worth looking at.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, it's the opposite of a utility tree where it's got a bunch of really cool shit all the time.
Hell yeah.
The bark stays really smooth when it gets young.
Okay.
And then as it gets to like a certain age, it's again, it's like this, you can very easily tell this adolescent versus kind of early 20s kind of tree. It starts to split beautifully. And it looks a lot like all the other different kind of pea family plants, where it has smooth bark that all at once, it's almost like overnight, it just all of a sudden goes and kind of like rips out of its outer shirt.
Wow.
You know? In fact, if you're in the Pacific Northwest, the trees that this reminds me of mostly is the Pacific willow. And there's another, it's very closely related to a couple different willow species. Not our tree we're talking about, but the Pacific willow. And they all have that really cool bark where it's like, it doesn't get very thick and furrowed until it's really old. But as it goes from juvenile to adult, you can really tell that it's like almost just ripping out of its outer skin.
And then the wood of the koa shows through.
Oh, it doesn't. Not the wood, just the layer of
inner bark
down
okay.
there. Alex, don't even get me started on the wood.
Well, that's a whole other topic.
It is a whole other topic. In fact, Alex, I'm not going to get started on it because I have in good authority that you are going to tell us a bit about the wood of this
tree. I'm going to do my best, Case.
This is a tree. Could you real quick, let's get do we have the jank of hardness of this?
Oh, I can certainly find it.
That's really what we need to know here because this is really the kind of thing that gets a tree to be a champion or not.
Yeah, let's see. We're going to the wood -database.com. I'm going to type in koa. It's, of course, searching. The Jenka hardness of the koa is 1,170.
Whoa! That's high.
That's very high.
Oh, my God.
However, the Jenka hardness of little koa,
3,250. What?
3,250.
Oh, my God.
Why didn't these guys compete in the tournament, huh?
They didn't have their agent talk to us.
Yeah.
You have to have a certified agent reach out to the pod in order to get your tree on the pod.
Of course. And you have to pay the application fee.
Exactly, which is 3,250 Janka hardness bucks.
Yes, you have to be at least this hard to ride this ride. Well, Casey, how about some Croson's homegrown trivia?
Yeah, give us the lowdown here.
All right, so let's start with the word itself, koa. In native Hawaiian language, koa means warrior.
Yes.
And it's purported, by that I mean I read it once on a website, that it's called warrior because of the first king of the Hawaiian Islands, Kamehameha the Great, who used koa for canoes for his warriors, and my favorite find of the day, the Leomano. The Leomano is one badass motherfucker knife.
Oh my god! That's the one with the shark teeth around the outside.
Yes, it has a handle a ring handle. And then it has sort of this hoop that comes out from it, and it has shark teeth embedded into the outside of the hoop. What? I would assume that you would use this to cut a guy's throat.
Yeah, to just swing at him. Bash at someone, yes. And they're like, yeah, I'm not going to go over there.
Yeah.
They have what was the term for that?
It's called a Leomano.
Jeez, that's terrifying. Oh, God, and it'll never break. Even if the teeth fall out, now it's just a bludgeon of the hardest wood on the whole island.
Exactly.
God.
And in the Hawaiian language, that may be derived from le o mano, which means a shark's lay.
Oh, I see.
Because it's sort of in a necklace shape.
Fascinating. I love language in that regard.
Oh, God, me too. As a musician, as a guitarist, I am mostly familiar with koa as a guitar would, Casey. I don't have a koa guitar, but I know they're very popular. Mm. But it wasn't used to make instruments until the 1800s, which I thought was kind of late.
Yeah, it feels like it.
When Portuguese colonizers came to the Hawaiian Islands, they brought a cavaquinho, which is a little four-stringed instrument made of wood. And Hawaiians loved it.
Yeah, did it, and then they adopted it, kind of made it their own with their own wood and songs and culture.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you look up a cavaquinho, it looks like a ukulele.
Yeah, gotcha.
Ukulele. That it is believed that's where the ukulele came from. Was this little four-stringed instrument?
Yeah, there are a lot of those kind of cultural things with like traditional peoples in Bolivia. They wear like bowler hats.
Oh wow.
And it's like the backstory of like how this all like kind of happened isn't necessarily like good. Like sometimes it's like you wear this hat, like it's almost like, man, we don't care. But then these cultures sometimes take things from their colonizers and like turn it into their own cultural thing, and they like reimagine it as something that is very much their own.
Yeah.
Which I always like that. So it's like, it's nice to see the nice kinds of cultural crosses, you know? Yeah. Those are always pleasant.
My favorite example of one of those is the fact that Polish immigrants brought their music to Mexico.
Oh.
And Mexican people loved polka. And they made a whole new genre of music on polka called mariachi.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Mariachi has these big guitars and a big thumping bass and accordion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never put that together.
Yeah.
That is just spectacular.
Yeah. In guitars, koa is considered a tone wood, so it really affects how the guitar sounds. It's the wood that mostly affects how the guitar sounds, because guitars are made with three or four woods sometimes.
Now, Alex, we've covered this.
Oh, we sure have, Casey. If you go listen to our Western Red Cedar episode from way back in the day, we talked to Sam Stewart, our buddy over at Strum in PDX, who knew way more about guitar woods than I would have ever thought anybody could. That whole interview is in that episode.
Yeah, that was a delight.
Yeah, it was awesome. So if you want to learn more about tonewood, there's your plug for that episode.
Gotcha.
A koa guitar right off the shelf is going to be kind of tight and bright. What that means is that it's going to be very, there's going to be a lot of high end. It's going to be kind of astringent and tinny, very sharp and sparkly sounding, with not a lot of mid, low, or low end sounds. But the more you play it, the more you play into it, the older the wood gets. It's gonna be a little more warmer and well rounded.
That's so fascinating.
And it happens over time. Like Yeah.
Well, it's like a cast iron pan. It gets better over time.
That's true, Casey. That's a great analogy.
All right.
This bit of trivia led me to a organization called Pacific Rim Tonewoods. They supply wood to luthiers, which is a guitar maker. They have two forestry programs, I guess, Casey.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. One of them is described as a demonstration forest.
Yes.
That's the one in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And then they have essentially a plantation forest here in the Pacific Northwest, in Washington. Yes,
Utopia they have their maple project, big leaf maple project in Washington.
Yeah.
And Siglo, they have their Koa project in Hawaii.
Oh, and it comes back to Koa. That's so good.
It sure does, almost as if planned, Casey.
Oh, how curious.
So Siglo, you can go to their websites, check out Pacific Rim Tone Woods. I noted to you that these websites have and I'm not making any accusations here. I want to make that very clear. But when we were researching for chocolate,
there were
these websites for big chocolate that were like had all these beautiful photos of, you know, the native people and the white the white chocolatiers, like
everyone's
working together, smiling,
quite happy.
Mr.
Nestle, like pulling a child out of a pit trap or something.
And then we discovered that it's like this like slave labor, human trafficking shit.
It was like an industry group kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where it's essentially a marketing scheme to make chocolate look not so bad.
Right.
Coffee, too, right? Coffee has a lot of these kinds of things as well. Because those are the two biggest commodities. And I say that there's lots of bigger commodities, but those are the two ones that are like prevalent in like everywhere all the time. And they are, it's like one of several, but we look through there and we're like, wait a second. And you look at like who's paying for these things, and
right,
it's like the Chocolatiers Association of America and like this lobbyist group, and like you're like, oh, wait a second.
So this website for Pacific Rim Tonewoods has a hint of that, but I'm making no accusations. They have videos on here with the people who work there, it's very clear that they care about trees.
Yes.
Not just about cutting them down to sell.
Yeah. Well, maybe, Alex, what we should do is reach out and give them the fifth degree. See a bit about what their thing is.
Put them on trial a little bit.
Well, yeah, I guess
Here we call it trial.
Yeah, yeah. We call it a trial, and we usually put it up on our Patreon afterwards because they're usually great conversations. We want to be careful because, Alex, I think kind of what you're hinting at here is that Koa is one of the most sought after tropical species of wood, and it only grows native in Hawaii. There's another closely related species that only grows native on the Reunion Islands, Reunion, and it's only one island. I keep on doing that. I did this entire research. There's the island. It's in the Mascarenes, but there's one island called Reunion. Anyway,
you're forgiven, Casey.
Thank you, Alex. I really appreciate it.
Your Reunion transgressions.
Yes. So yeah, it's important to note when there is a resource tree like this that is potentially constantly getting cut down at the expense of the local economy or culture or whatever it is. Whenever you see a really nice, well done, flashy website, sometimes they're actually doing what they're actually doing.
Yeah.
Other times they're just masking what they're actually doing, making it look really good.
Yeah, and we're not making any accusations. That was more of a side comment, really, opened up into something else, which is fine.
Right. But it's an important thing to realize, I think, because we're talking about this one particular tree. So you always want to be like, okay, you know, tentative.
Right.
So I really would. I think it would be really a good thing to like reach out. Maybe see like, hey, so what exactly are you guys doing? Like give us a little bit we can give to our tree friends here, and maybe we can see how well they're doing in terms of their demonstration forest.
Give them a grade.
Yeah, not that we are, you know, good at rating things, but you know, we're
the certifiers, Casey. Never
are
forget.
We? Is that the case? Cool.
Yeah. So they are Siglo, this Hawaiian forestry program.
Yeah.
Is just planting huge plantations of koa trees. I'm assuming to harvest just for guitars and such. But,
yeah, I think when we were reading through it, it was, yeah, they're of course doing it for the guitar wood, for a product, but they're trying to do it in a sustainable way.
Yeah, they also care about making a forest.
Exactly, and trying to reclaim it from pasture land, which it has never been. There's never been pasture things on Hawaii, so pasture land is not real.
Oh, you're saying that pasture land only came with the colonialists?
Yes.
Okay.
Precisely. Precisely.
But before that, it's not like cows were grazing on Hawaii.
Exactly. There were the only things that came were with the initial Polynesians who came to the island way back when, like I said, 1600 years ago.
Yeah.
They came and they brought some of their own plants and animals from their native lands. So, you know, it's kind of a funny thing to think about the difference in, you know, those two events and how we look at them so differently, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of how you use your space, I suppose.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, Casey, there's your homegrown trivia.
Yeah. I think that was, I'm so happy. I really enjoy when you do homegrown trivia.
Well, thanks. I haven't done it in a bit. And I kind of got the itch today because it's a tree that I care about.
Yeah, it's close to your heart here.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of want to talk about colonization, but of a different sort, Alex.
Wow.
Have you ever considered how far away Hawaii is from every other place?
Well, if I had to guess, one moment.
Take your time.
And this is just off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I would say that Hawaii is roughly... Oh, I can't find it in my head.
You're thinking really hard. I can see that you need to scroll up a little bit higher.
Yes. Oh, in my head, I need to scroll up. And it's roughly about 2,000 miles away from the nearest, like, big continent.
Yeah, okay. That's... You're spot on. I don't know how you knew that.
And then 5,000 miles on the other side.
Yeah, from a different continent. Yeah, that's totally true. Now, the odds of some new plant colonizing these islands is somewhat astronomical.
Mm.
And the way we know that this is astronomical is because some people have really, really looked into it.
Astronomically bad?
Astronomically not good that you would get something there. Okay. I'm trying to think odds. Are odds really, I guess you have good and bad odds. Yeah. Low odds that you're going to actually get some plant to grow out there. And I'll explain why.
Yeah.
You have a chance happening that a seed in a fruit or in a bird or a spore flying through the air is going to have all the right things happen to get it from point A at least 2,000 miles away over to point B, Hawaii. And then it has to not only survive the journey,
right,
it has to then find a spot that is conducive for it to grow.
Which is hard enough on its own.
Exactly. What if that bird carrying the very first koa came over and decided that it was going to poop on the beach instead of way up at least 300 and some feet in the mountains?
And it's like a new place where you aren't guaranteed that anything will take to the soil or
exactly.
whatever.
Yeah, there's so many unknowns. What if it lands on a rock instead?
You know?
What if it happens to not rain that day? Who knows?
Well, nature does find a way, Casey.
Nature does. It always finds a way. And it turns out, on average, it found a way once every 50,000 years in Hawaii. That is about the average time that a plant has come over, was not there, and then colonized the islands of Hawaii.
Every 50,000 years or so.
Yeah, because there's just a little over 1,000 native species of flowering plants, and ferns.
Well, those are terrible odds.
Terrible odds. And this is, again, it's also the math is based on Kauai being the oldest exposed island.
Okay.
Which, it should be noted, there's other old seamounts that are underneath the water. Hmm. So if sea levels were lower, other islands used to be actually exposed.
Cool.
Isn't that wild to think about?
That's like a good science fiction premise.
Oh, it totally is. Reduce it and find like an entire other like culture of people that used to live. It's like Atlantis, essentially.
Oh my God, cool.
Yeah, Hawaiian Atlantis. Oh, that was sick. So that is about the odds. And so some folks have studied this, and we call them biogeographers.
Oh.
We've talked about biogeography a few times. And specifically, the whole idea came from islands. So the whole subject is island biogeography.
Okay.
And essentially, the idea is, how do things colonize spaces? What is the carrying capacity in terms of the size of a space and the resources on that space to support X amount of, you know, population of whatever? That was a lot. Does that make any sense?
Can you repeat that? I'm sorry.
So the idea is, what are the odds of something getting to a remote island?
Mm-hmm.
And once it gets there, how big does that island need to be? And what's the carrying capacity of it in terms of resources for something to create a viable reproducing population?
Okay, so it's like a formula for life getting to this island.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And that mostly has some that theory predicts that biodiversities are mainly products of immigration, extinction, the island's size, and its proximity to other nearest mainlands.
Ah, and as we know, Hawaii is very far from other mainlands.
Exactly.
So that makes sense that the odds would be low for something to get there.
Precisely. So that's why we realize it's about every 50,000 years on average. I'm not trying to say that literally every 50,000 years a new seed landed.
It's coming up, Casey.
We got a new tree species on its way, we're pretty sure.
There it is. Look.
Yeah. Wow, it's there. Hi. Yeah, so this is an idea that I really dove into in this book by David Quammen called The Song of the Dodo. A wonderful book. If you go to our website, you can find it, and you can either buy it through that link or go get it yourself somewhere else, or just look at the cover and be like, wow, that looks cool.
You love this book. I heard you talk about it so many times.
I just love it, Alex.
Even
it's
before
so good.
We started this podcast, I heard you talk about it.
Yeah, right. My good friend Max Anderson bought it for me because I have a tattoo of a dodo. So he's like, man, cool, dodo, I'll get this for Casey. And then it turns out it was just such a fantastic book. Literally, he only judged it by the cover and then got it for me. And great.
Sometimes it pays to judge a book by its cover.
Sometimes it does. Yeah. So we ended up, I read through this, and it's all about island biogeography. So it's like, okay, the further away you are, the less likely it is that something from the mainland is going to get there.
Sure.
The smaller the island, the fewer resources, and the smaller the carrying capacity, or the lower the carrying capacity is. And this is similar if you do the reverse, where you say, okay, we want to protect some species. How big of a space do we need to protect this species? So you can kind of do it, you know, both ways, like fragmentation of habitat, you know?
Okay.
Because an island is not only a literal island like what we're talking about here, it could be something that is an island in some regard. The giant peaks of California that are above 14,000 feet that have bristlecone pines. Each one of those peaks is essentially an island.
I remember us talking about this at some point. Was it our rain, when we were talking about rain shadows or something?
No, well, we kind of hit on it a little bit. We definitely talked about it on the bristlecone pine episode.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking
of. Yeah, so it's a subject that comes up often just when we talk about how evolution happens.
Yeah.
This is a big driver of it, is this island biogeography, this entire idea. So I know, I'm sure we've brought it up a few times. And then if you just use the term island, what they use it, they call them sky islands.
Okay, I was going to ask if there was a different term, because
we
know islands is a very specific thing.
Right. So this is kind of the idea that people are thinking about, like, okay, so let's apply this to Hawaii. Hawaii is big enough that it has has a pretty huge carrying capacity. It can supply lots of resources for lots of things, which is why it kept getting more and more and more and more things.
Mm.
However, the koa is unique because some scientists were like, well, we got this really cool tree. What's its closest relative? They ended up finding this other tree that grows down in Reunion. And Reunion is a small little island that is approximately 18,000 kilometers away from Hawaii.
Wow.
Now, for those of you who are doing the math, 18,000 kilometers is approximately 11,184 miles away. Now, let's just think for a second, Alex. 11,184 miles. That is so far away.
Yeah. Say it again. 1,000?
No, 11,000.
Oh, plus 10,000. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, just a quick little 10,000.
11,000 miles.
Yeah, that is, like, I drove across the country down from Oregon to California, all the way over to Georgia, all the way up to Washington, D.C., and then back down through the Southwest and back up.
Yeah.
And I think that reached about 10,100 miles.
Jesus.
So I'm still 1,000 miles short from the distance between Reunion and Hawaii.
Wow.
One's in the Indian Ocean, the other's in the Pacific.
So what is the most likely transporter?
Yes.
For that seed?
A bird.
Of course.
It can't do anything else. We know this. It can't live in the water. The seeds die. It also doesn't grow near where the water would throw its seeds up on the bank.
Sure.
It needs to be up a little bit higher. However, here's the interesting thing, Alex. I love this.
Casey's smitten.
This is not the relationship that everyone thought it initially was. Hawaii has had koa for about 5 million years.
Which is about how old Hawaii is.
Exactly. So it probably got there as soon as the islands started popping up and they could support a tree species. Meanwhile, when you look at the closest relative of both of these two trees, and I should note, the other one we're talking about is Acacia heterophylla, which they call the Highland Tamarind. That's on Reunion.
A tamarind, okay.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the most closely related other species is Acacia melanoxylon, which is called the Blackwood Acacia from Eastern Australia.
Okay.
So they know, they can see that these trees grow in kind of similar habitats. Mm-hmm. So like, okay, so this totally makes sense. They did a big genealogical study and created a family tree, and they've learned that it went from Australia 5,000 miles up to Hawaii, chilled there, and then another bird took another koa seed from Hawaii and flew that about 1.4 million years ago all the way over to Reunion.
Wow.
Dropped a seed there in the same habitat zone that it could actually live in and started another population.
Birds, man.
They did this. What the hell? How does a bird decide that it's going to fly 5,000 miles and then another bird be like, you know what? I'm going to fly 11,000 miles.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I always imagine these birds just aren't pooping this whole time.
They're constipated over the ocean.
Yeah. But I don't think that's accurate. Apparently, they have found some of these seeds can like stay in different places in their gut for like a good while.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Weeks at a time.
Like purposefully, like they keep them sort of like stowed for those long trips.
I don't know.
That would be cool. Yeah,
I don't have a good answer.
Well, here's another question that with potentially no answer.
Please.
Do we know what species of bird that might have been?
I think we do, and it's like a petrel. But okay. they're not 100% sure because there's a couple different things that they're trying to figure out. There's no real like good answer.
Okay.
5 million years is a pretty long time.
Yeah.
However, they do know that there are certain birds that make their nests in this certain zone and they don't make it further down. So they went up there, they made a nest, they pooped out a seed, then there you go. You got it working.
Oh my God. That's so crazy that people figured this out. It's like a cold case, you know?
Oh
like,
my God, right?
And they use the DNA from the hockey rink's bathroom sink to find find the worker who was with him on the last, and he figured out his last name was this. And there's, it's like this huge puzzle.
It's amazing.
It seems almost impossible that human beings would be able to figure this out.
And you know what? They did it, Alex, with essentially an atomic clock of mutations. This is another thing we've talked about. And, you know, we're going to start saying that forever. We'll be like, yeah, we've talked about all this stuff before.
Hey, we've passed 100, man.
But yeah. Now we're just those old guys. We're like, well, back in my day, they used to use atomic clocks to figure these things out.
We really are becoming click and clack.
Yeah. Well, they do this where essentially they can count mutations in different gene codes.
Yeah.
And they can look back and they say, okay, we can expect that there's going to be a mutation about every this many years
on average. Okay.
So then that's also how speciation happens.
Yeah.
So from the Blackwood acacia to the koa, they were like, yeah, that's actually, it's been split up, and they found if they just went off of their conservative estimate, that happened about 6 million years ago.
Wow.
So the numbers don't exactly add up, but they're about in the same area so where our estimations are like, well, actually, it's very likely that one bird, right, like when Hawaii was first popping above, came over, dropped the seed, it started to speciate because it's had X amount of time to begin to be its new species. But Alex, they also did this between the Highland tamarind, our Acacia heterophylla, and our Acacia koa, the koa. And guess what?
What?
They are so closely related that many people right now are basically like, no one's going to say this out loud, but they're the same species.
Wow.
It is, like, there's a couple small differences.
Should we say it here, Casey?
We should say it here.
You go.
It's the same species.
That's incredible.
The koa is on two different island chains across 11,184 miles of ocean and land.
Wow.
And it has been spread over there. Imagine if we give it another 16 million years. Birds are just going to be like, well, I'm going to take it over here. And it'll find every niche that it possibly can because we're giving it that amount of time, even though to get to that niche is so like the odds are so against it.
Yeah.
Yet we have the evidence. It clearly has happened not only once, but twice to the same species.
Casey, before we get into our review, should we note that we very clearly stated up top that this is an endemic tree to the Hawaiian Islands.
Yeah.
But it seems like maybe it's not.
Maybe it's not. That's the whole thing. That is why I was so excited about this episode, because I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like this research has been out since like 2014.
Wow. Yet
there's a lot of like people who are very proud of their tree.
Sure.
So there's a part of me that's also like, nah, it is. It's endemic for sure over there. And let's just let it be two different species. Maybe the folks in Reunion are like, yeah, this is this tree. We do this thing. And they have an entire other cultural taxonomy with it.
Yeah.
Why should we come in with our science that is, for the most part, irrelevant and be like, oh, actually, culturally, you're not that interesting. It's not that good.
I'm with you, Case.
Yeah, I think we should keep them as two different species.
Nice.
They've been apart for so long, they might as well be, and just leave it at that. And just leave it at that, but kind of stand back and look and be like, that is cool. You know? But why force our opinions on anyone? Just let it be.
We'll be right back with our review.
Yes, and then we immediately force our opinions on people.
what a little world we've built for ourselves.
What a wonderful world.
Right after the break. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. That was our discussion of the koa. It's time for our review. Here's how it works. We're going to give some final thoughts on this tree and give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor.
That's right.
Casey.
Alex.
As our resident...
ocean-going bird.
Sure.
Thank you.
We believe with you.
Thanks for that. Uh-huh. I wanted to be an ocean-going bird.
You got it, pal.
I ever tell you, if I ever own my own bar, that I want to call it the Wandering Albatross and make it nautical-themed.
Cool.
I have no affinity towards nautical things. I just really like that as the name.
I think that's a great name and a great premise for a bar.
Thank you, Alex.
And all of the food is regurgitated.
Oh, it's all different kinds of mashed potatoes. That's it. Oh, that would be so good. Yeah, we can also baby bird it for an extra $20 if you want. Yeah,
in right the back now. Room.
Okay, Alex, our koa, it is a tree. I'm so torn with this because like I've never seen one of these trees like in my real life. And they appear, for all intents and purposes, to be spectacular. Like giant crowns. They can get like 50 feet across.
Wow.
They are 115 feet tall. They have these beautiful little flowers. They make these sickle-shaped leaves that are technically not leaves that I love. I just think it's so interesting. They're trees that seem to have, they just seem to have it all. And I love a tree that has it all. Of course, you know me, I'm a lover of the superlative trees.
That's right.
So this is the biggest of all of the trees on Hawaii.
Yeah.
Love that about it.
Yeah.
And I also am a fan of like the cultural kind of rebound that's happening. Not only are they making, you know, instruments and things out of this tree, they are also having a revitalization of like making traditional canoes in Hawaii. And I read this in one of the many things that I read through this week. And so people are like, wow, okay, I want to go get a traditional tree, a native koa, and cut it down and turn it into a thing. And cool. So they look around and they're like, well, where are all our big koas? They've all been cut down. Most of their spaces, not most, much of their habitat has been turned into grazing, you know, farm pastures and things like that, which destroys the trees. It kills them and, you know, they just never really come back until you do a lot of work. So now people are like, oh man, we need to get that back, reclaim this tree and our cultural connection with it and things. And I just dig that. Like, I just always love when everything comes together in that way. So for me, like, I think I'm going to give the koa, like, I really want to go like a 9.1.
Hell yeah.
Because I just think this tree is cool. It is clearly not overplanted, should be planted way more. And every picture that I see of it, it has that tropical emergent tree appearance to it, where it's like this tree that stands head and shoulders above all the rest and just has this really curvaceous kind of bark or kind of branching pattern that then pops out with this big canopy and you're just like, damn, I want to be in that tree. That's how I feel about it. So I think
9.1.
A 9.1. It's got it all.
Very good.
Plant it and then cut it down, turn it into a canoe, come over here and let me take a ride in it. But you have to canoe it across the 2,000 miles
to get here. The old-fashioned way.
The old-fashioned way. Thank you.
9.1 golden cones of honor for the koa from dendrologist Casey Clapp.
Yeah. So, Alex, what do you think? This is a tree that you also have very close to your heart for other reasons.
Yeah. I've also never seen one with my real eyes in real life. But I don't know. I'm very drawn toward the koa. I like that it doesn't have a utility feature. Every part of it is unique and expressive and creative.
Yeah.
And speaking of expression and creativity, I love a wood that can be used to make an instrument.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what instrument, I'm down for it.
Nice.
I think its whole journey, its 51 million year journey is very fascinating. 51?
5.1.
I think its 5.1 million year journey is very fascinating. I love that, you know, birds get it done. Shit, Case. 9.5 golden cones of honor for the koa.
Wow, Alex, 9.5. You took it there. You really did this one good.
It's in my heart, Casey, and I can't wait to see them when and if I visit the islands of Hawaii.
Me neither. And I think this is our second week in a row. What is it when a famous actor goes on to a show?
Cameo.
A cameo, yes. A cameo from the world famous Melodica.
That's right. To the koa, We induct you into the Golden Arboretum of Honor. We honor you. Congratulations, Koa. That was our review of the Koa. Casey.
Spectacular.
It's time for a bit of a game.
Oh, yes. Okay, let's do this.
Last week, I was on a podcast.
That's right. Actually,
maybe a couple weeks ago. I was on a podcast called Honest Jams.
Yeah.
Hosted by Eyal and Walker.
Yeah, I saw Eyal and you play together a couple weeks ago.
That's right. We played a show at the Alberta Street Pub.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. Super sweet, sweet man. And I met his co-host, Walker, wonderful lady. The premise of the podcast is that they have songwriters on the show.
Okay.
They give them a prompt ahead of time. Say, write a song about this.
Yeah.
Everybody, the two hosts and the guest, each write a song on the prompt.
Do you have to use a certain instrument to write the song? Or
it could
like
be anything.
Anything, okay.
Yeah. You come in, you share your songs, you talk about your songwriting process. I had so much fun. It was like,
it sounds awesome.
I can't wait to go back. If they ever want me back, I'm there. So in each episode they have a segment where they look up internet facts about the prompt.
Okay.
My prompt was night.
Yes.
As in the time of day.
Yeah.
However, because I am a tree podcaster, they prepared fun facts to do with night and trees.
Oh.
So
this.
How it worked was that they gave me one of these prompt or one of these fun facts and asked how accurate it was.
Gotcha.
I gave my semi-professional opinion. And then
I think at this point it is your professional opinion. I don't think you can be semi anymore.
Technically, it is my professional opinion. Okay. So what we're going to do here today, Case, I have these three fun facts.
All right.
I'm going to read you one. I'm going to tell you what I said.
Okay.
In response to these. And then we're going to see what you have to say and how close I was to something that's factual.
Sounds great. Okay. Let's do it.
Here's the by the way, this podcast is called Honest Jams. I think by now my episode is out. But hey, give some other episodes a listen. They're really great hosts and it's a wonderful show.
Yeah, most definitely. We'll put the link in the show notes so you can go to our website, click on this show, and then you will be able to find all these cool things as well as a bunch of other really cool resources that I found. So if you ever want to get more information on doing anything that has to do with the Koa, that's where to find it.
Hell yeah. Here it is, Case.
All right, what's our first one?
Our first one is, can you sleep in a tree?
Oh.
If you intend to sleep 15 feet off the ground or higher, first learn to climb safely. You'll need 150 feet of arborist rope, a harness, a helmet, carabiners, and a special tree sleeping hammock, or a lightweight platform called a portaledge.
Yeah.
Before you ascend, check the weather. And this was from NewYorkTimes.com.
Gotcha. Okay, New York Times, not a bad resource to begin with.
No.
Yeah.
I call them the New York Crimes.
Yeah, but. Well, yeah, most people do. They are failing, so. Okay, well, what was your answer to
this?
So
my answer was that, of course, those things are very safe.
Yeah.
But if you are looking to sleep 15 feet up in a tree, it's a little bit overproduced. Yeah, I don't think you need all of that stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's like if you're not already a professional arborist and have that shit in your truck,
yeah,
you're not gonna like go to Next Adventure and buy $300 worth of gear to sleep in a tree for one night.
Feet. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That's true.
So I said it was like all sound advice, but like a little overdone.
Yeah, I think that's fair. My first thought was like a treehouse that I built as a kid.
Yeah,
and I was like, I didn't use a.
Yeah,
no, I just built that treehouse.
Right,
it was sweet. So I think that. I don't want to necessarily put my stamp of approval on building a treehouse because I think kids should do it. I love it. Looking back, I'd be like, it's very dangerous. But
yeah.
I don't know. I survived. Whatever.
Well, it doesn't mean everybody will.
Exactly. And that's fine. but with this, technically, and this is, of course, because it's the New York Times, they have to be technical about things. Yes. Are they missing a few things? Also, yes, they don't have any safety glasses. If you're climbing a tree, you need safety glasses.
No snacks.
No snacks. No water. Also, yeah. They didn't say a goddamn thing about the knots. You have to know how to put all of these things together. It's like batteries not included, you
right.
know? So also, 150 feet, my God. Maybe that's just because that's the smallest length you can get. But if you're sleeping 15 feet off the ground, there's no reason for you to go and set a line 75 feet up in a tree, right. have it come down, and then climb your way up 15 feet.
So we're pretty much in agreement there.
Yeah, I think you are right.
Next one.
Sick question. All right, what's next?
Why is sleeping under a tree at night not advisable?
Oh,
final answer, this says. Sleeping under a tree is not advisable at night since photosynthesis does not occur. Oxygen is not being produced by the trees. In addition to this, the trees continue respiring, thereby causing the amount of carbon dioxide to be increased and the amount of oxygen to be reduced.
Wow. What did you think about this?
I thought this was pretty bunk, Casey.
Yeah, I agree. I
agreed that
the New York Times.
Right.
This is Baiju.
Baiju.com. I agreed that trees don't photosynthesize at night.
Correct. Yeah.
But it's not like they're. It's not that you're going to get carbon dioxide poisoning or
yeah,
something.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
It's they're doing their thing all the time.
Yeah, I think you got that one right.
Yeah.
There's not much more to be said about that than it's like technically your premise is correct. Your conclusion. Out of proportion.
Yes.
Yeah. I can't think of anyone who's been sleeping in the forest and asphyxiated because there's too much carbon dioxide from those goddamn trees.
Maybe if you were like in a vacuum and you slept, but even then.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I think they're failing to note the amount of oxygen latent in the atmosphere.
Right.
So, yeah, that's where it goes. Yeah. Sometimes you miss something. That's
yeah,
okay.
It's pretty irresponsible to like put that on a website.
Hey, just don't go to www.arboriculturecompletelyarbitrary.com.
Oh.
Some irresponsible things we've put on there.
True. Okay, Casey, last one.
All right, here we go.
Do trees sleep at night?
Hmm.
According to research.
Okay, yeah.
Just what generally.
Yeah, exactly.
While trees may not sleep in the same way animals do, they do relax their branches during nighttime, which suggests that yes, trees have activity rest cycles. These cycles can also vary depending on the tree species.
That is so curious. Of all of them, this has my interest peaked the most.
Interesting.
Yeah. What did you say?
I said that this is a bit of a sensationalist statement.
Uh-huh.
Trees aren't literally like resting their branches down at night. They do have a cycle.
Yeah.
A circadian cycle.
Exactly.
Did
that's
I say
true.
Circadian. Circadian.
Yeah. Ah, isn't that a Stadium Circadian by right. Red Hot Chili Peppers? I love that album.
They have a cycle just like anything else.
Yeah.
But trees don't rest in the way that people do. This is too much of a humanization, too much of a sensationalist.
Exactly. Too much of a personification.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is, you know, a big thing that people have been doing for the last like 10 or 15 years, which is fine. As long as it gets people to be interested, whatever.
Sure. But I think there's a fine line between that and misinformation.
Exactly. I think you're right. And so in this case, I can understand it. In fact, there are some plants that they close their leaves at night and then open them back up.
Casey, when given this statement, I didn't say leaves, I guess, but I did mention that the magnolia flower
will
close and open depending on what process it's going through.
Precisely.
But that doesn't support this statement.
Yeah, it's not. It doesn't really go with the sleepiness to it.
Yeah.
So I can understand. I mean, there's also the idea that during photosynthesis, they're pumping sugars through, like they're kind of constantly doing stuff. So when they stop using the sugars, essentially the pressure of the sap moving through their veins reduces a tiny bit.
Yeah.
So it's that they're like using up what they have because now they're still using and respiring. So they're using their energy. So that might be that, there's like a little bit of like,
Tensile pressure or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
What is that called?
Turgor pressure. Yeah, just how much water is in a plant.
Right.
So that could reduce, thereby letting the branches reduce. But I mean, the bigger the branch, the less that's going to happen, because now it's held up by the rigid wood, not the amount of pressure within the individual cells, like in a plant's leaf tissue or right. something like that.
Okay. So,
I agree. I think it's a little bit sensational. I think, though, this one has the most, like, yes, kind of.
It has promise.
Yeah, it does.
As a premise.
Exactly. But then everything else after it, again, is a little bit sensational, like you said.
Yeah. Okay.
I agree.
Hey, I pretty much nailed it, huh?
You did. I think you did a great job.
You proud of me, Pop?
I sure am, kiddo. Great job out there. Let's go throw a ball.
So yeah, go listen to Honest Jams. It's a great podcast if you have any interest in songwriting, or if you are a songwriter, or if you want to, like, if you're playing around with the idea of writing a song but don't know where to get started. It's a podcast that shows just how low stakes it can be to write a song.
Gotcha.
I think when you're starting out songwriting, it feels like, well, what if I do a bad job? It's like, well, then you just pretend it never happened and you write another one.
Just do it again.
And these people are writing a song every week.
God, that's so many songs.
It's so impressive. God. Yeah, it's called Honest Jams. Casey.
Sounds great, Alex.
That was our Honest Jam segment.
Hey, there we go. Honestly, I want people to do this now every now and then. Just send us in a couple fun prompts.
Yeah.
See what we think about them.
Casey, it's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A.
Oh, I love the sound of that.
I chose this question very specifically.
Oh.
Because of something you showed me that happened on Instagram recently.
Oh.
There was a plant influencer on Instagram. Who made a claim, and you never do this, but you commented on it.
Yes, I did.
Stating that it was incorrect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this person also said, I'm not an arborist, but... And then proceeded to
give agricultural advice.
Advice. Which we thought was uncool and irresponsible.
I do. I don't throwing shade at people. I don't feed the trolls. In fact, I've had to, through this podcast, often we've had to have talks, be like, we're not responding to that. We just can't do it. And so I hate being a troll as well. So I don't like to do it.
I don't think you were doing that.
I tried very hard not to, because I also respect the person. They're also putting out themselves on the world. So
yeah, it came from a genuine place.
Yes.
And I think their information, I'm putting that in air quotes because it wasn't true.
Yeah.
Came from a genuine place.
Yes.
But that place was just inherently false, and they didn't know what they were saying.
Yes, so, correct.
So I chose this question because it kind of has to do with that topic.
Okay, yeah.
Which was that a tree fell over.
Okay.
And the influencer claimed that it was because the canopy was overly heavy.
It's too thick.
Yes, and it needed thinning. Uh-huh. And remember, everybody, this is a reminder to have your trees trimmed and thinned.
Yes,
you
specifically thin.
Yes, you responded with, hey, thinning is actually counterproductive. Mm-hmm. It does the opposite of what you think it's doing. A good, full, healthy canopy is crucial to wind
dampening. Yes, and that the entire reason that tree fell was surely because of the roots.
Yes.
And damage to the roots.
Which were growing right next to a big... A driveway.
Yeah. And then the influencer also noted that the driveway, there's no good roots underneath the driveway, not because something happened to the roots, but because the tree's growing to the driveway, so all those roots just, you know, aren't very strong. Just not the case. Like that is not a if this then that statement.
Right.
It does not follow. Many roots are extremely strong wherever they grow. Unless something happened to them.
Sure.
It might have been that they cut them and then installed the driveway, in which case, that tree's probably gonna have a higher likelihood of falling over. But one driveway, one tree does not make a negative relationship.
Does not a negative relationship make.
Thank you.
Just take a look at the row of sweet gums out here. That's like an obstacle course walking down that sidewalk. Like
pavement. Who cares?
So the question I chose, Casey, is from Nick from our Patreon.
What's up, Nick? Good to see you.
Nick says, in general, what should I look for to figure out when I need to get my trees trimmed? A side note, FYI.
Okay.
you can just get a dozen Cheddar Bay biscuits carry out from Red Lobster for entirely too little money.
Oh, what a throwback to us talking about that a couple weeks ago. Thanks, Nick. Oh, see, these are the patrons we love. Yeah. They're like, also, P.S., if you go there after 10, everything's half off.
So it looks like you can just walk out like with a box of a dozen donuts of Cheddar Bay biscuits.
Yeah. Delicious.
That sounds great to me. God. And he says it's cheaper than it should be.
It's cheap. Everything is, isn't it?
So Casey, this is trimmed, not thinned.
Yes.
But I thought it was I wanted to talk about that and I had to work it in somehow.
Yeah, so. I think this is a perfect way to do it.
Okay.
It's a common term. It's an easy term. You know, some people say pruned, some say trimmed, worked on, you name it. There's a lot of different ways to say it. So the real thing, the best place, the only place to start is with an objective. So a lot of people think I should just get my trees pruned. The thing is, pruning is only for people. Trees will do everything themselves from start to finish. They will put the right strength in the right place at all points in time. They will potentially do something that will cause some kind of defect that will later down the line cause something to fail. The first thing to come to mind is a codominant stem. We have two stems that are growing really close to each other. When they're little, who cares? When they're both 2 feet in diameter, you're like, whoa, those are huge things, and they can split off one from the other.
Okay.
So,
something you would want to have trimmed.
Yes, okay. Exactly. But the thing is, you only want to have it trimmed so the tree doesn't split and fall on something you care about.
You also have to know what you're looking for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So without getting into any of those, you know, really minute specifics, the big thing to start with on anything is some objective. Like, okay, what is your objective with this tree? Maybe in this case, you want to make the tree better at dealing with wind. Maybe you want to raise it up so you have more clearance underneath, or pull it away from a house, or get rid of the dead wood, or a thousand different things.
So you never want to go into it with just, I want to get my tree trimmed for the sake of it.
Precisely. There is no sake of pruning.
Right.
You're always doing something.
You need a goal.
Yeah. And okay, there's plenty of companies who will provide you that goal.
Sure.
There's also plenty of companies who will say, oh, yeah, you just got to get your tree pruned just because you got to prune a tree.
Right.
But they're not actually doing anything. And most of the time, in order to make it look like they did something, they do something bad. So thinning is the biggest bad thing that you can do to a tree. A lot of people call it wind thin. There's a tree care company in Portland called Wind Thin.
Wow.
Which is just like, oh my God.
Built on a lie.
Funny enough, they don't do the worst work. There's other companies that have better names that make them seem better that do worse work. So the irony's fun. But they'll thin your tree. That's what they do. That's the whole thing. It's all snake oil though.
Yeah.
And what essentially you should do, she say, look at your tree and say, is there something that needs to be done? If so, what and why?
If not, you're good.
You're good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of times, like you said, you do need a professional eye to look at these things.
Sure, yeah.
And say, oh, well, that is actually an issue right there. Maybe it's a branch that's crossing. Maybe it's a sucker that's growing in a weird way. Maybe it's a branch that has a small crack in it that you wouldn't notice unless you knew exactly what you were looking for. A thousand different things. It could also be that you can't tell the difference between living wood and dead wood, because when a tree's covered in leaves, it's pretty easy to see which branch is and is not dead. It's way more difficult in the wintertime when all the leaves have fallen away to say, well, which one's alive still and which one isn't. If you go up and climb that tree, there's some really good, easy telltale signs. Also, if you just shake a branch, you can kind of see if the top just like kind of nubs out and there's no little buds on it, things like that. So getting rid of dead wood, great thing. If you want to thin your tree, think again.
Yeah.
There's no reason for it. And the reason that I said that in this post is that essentially a tree with a huge big canopy dampens any wind that's coming to it really well. It's like one big giant, not sail, but dampening mechanism where it bends and sways and twists. Every bend and sway and twist causes the tree to say, okay, what just got a little tiny bit broken? What's strained? I'm going to reinforce that next year. So it's called building taper. Hmm. Every year, the tree reacts to whatever happened to it the year prior.
Interesting.
It keeps doing that until everything is perfectly in sync.
Wow.
So every year, it's responding to everything that's happened to it for its entire life.
Cool.
So if you start changing that. Wait, can I say something? Oh, please.
She remembers.
She... I don't even know what that's from.
Jurassic Park.
Oh, it is. Oh, my God. That's our second Jurassic Park reference. This you said the nature or life finds a way.
That's right. Good and we talked us. About the islands of Hawaii without talking about Jurassic
that's
Park.
That's true. Fools. We're fools.
It doesn't take place on Hawaii, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. It looks like it does.
No.
In fact, I think some of it was filmed there.
Isla Nublar.
Yeah. Is that the name of the place?
Yeah.
Isla Nublar?
Isla Nublar, I think.
Oh, wow. That's a cool name. Whenever you do some big treatment to a tree, which is essentially pruning it in some way, you are changing what the tree is already used to. If you are thinning
right.
it, you're getting rid of the things that it has been depending on. It's all one big system. It is a big one unit.
Yeah.
So when you start taking pieces away from that unit, the tree is now dealing with, even if it's minutely different things, it's different and the tree's not, it's not adapted for that.
I see.
And it'll take several years for it to get adapted to it because it has to first see what it is, react the next year when it puts on its new wood, and then do that a few times because maybe it needs a couple extra big thick layers over here because now the weight or the amount of pressure it's getting and therefore the stress and strain on a different part is greater or reduced. All these different things.
Here's what's happening. Your mom is in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And she's got it handled.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you go in, you're like, hey, here, I'll help you. And she's like, no, I got it. You go, no, here, I'll help you. And you grab a plate and it slips out of your finger because it's covered in oil.
Uh-huh.
And it drops and crashes on the floor. And yeah. She's like, well, fuck, I had it handled.
Mom,
I knew
there
was oil on that plate. Now I have to not only continue cooking, but clean up this ceramic mess on the floor.
Yes.
So when a tree knows what it's doing.
Exactly.
It was built for this moment, right?
Literally every year of its life is building on whatever it learned the last year.
Yeah.
And years prior.
So when you take it upon yourself as a human to be like, I know what this tree needs. Let's thin it out. Let's trim this thing. Suddenly the tree's like, ah, wait. Something changed.
Yeah.
And it wasn't me. What the fuck do I do now? And then it has to adapt to that.
Precisely, Alex. That's a perfect description.
You're stressing it. The tree out. Leave it alone.
Yes, exactly. It knows exactly what it's doing. So I will say, sometimes branches break. Sometimes they just get overloaded by wind or snow or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That happens. It's a natural part of it. An arborist can look at it and provide you ideas on how you can reduce the likelihood that it happens. Big hint here, it's not thinning. It's almost never, ever thinning. I can't think of an example where it would be thinning.
Casey's
maybe
thinking.
One. Oh. You might thin some things if you need more airflow because you have a fungal infection, but that would be only on a small pear or prunus of some kind.
Okay.
That's about it.
So basically what we're saying, hire an arborist if you think something needs doing.
Yes.
But don't just trim for the sake of it.
Exactly.
It's not like something, it's not like regular maintenance you have to do.
Yeah. I think looking at your tree is regular maintenance.
There you go.
That is about all you need to do.
If you have a question for us, join the Patreon at the Quercus and Alder tier. That's Q&A, $3 a month. And you get to submit questions for the mainline episodes. If they don't get chosen for these episodes, we have regular Patreon exclusive Q&A episodes where you definitely will get your question answered. Above that is the $5 tier, the Arboretum, where you can have 2 bonus episodes a month delivered to your inbox about other related topics and trees.
Mm-hmm.
Above that, of course, the Cone of the Month Club. It's just like the Jelly of the Month Club, but with cones. We send you a new one every single month. And by one, I mean a sticker of an illustration of a cone.
Not the actual cones.
We're not sending you real cones. Yeah, I'm so sorry.
We don't want to get the permits for that.
But you can build your own little cone collection of stickers. Put them on a notebook. Put them on a water bottle. Just keep them in a drawer. Each one comes with a little info card on that species. It's all very sweet and it's sent directly to your physical mailbox. Above that, Arbitrary Plus, two live streams a month, one with Casey and I on a host of topics, and then one with just me playing a tree or nature-themed video game. Put it on while you're doing your house chores, or hang out in the chat with us.
Yeah, say hi.
And you get all of these VOD, video on demand. So at any point, if you want to go back and watch any of these live streams, you can. Above that, at the very, very top of our Patreon tiers, generous admission. Starts at $20. You can give whatever you want, and it's just an extra little generosity thing.
That's exactly right. And
it makes me nervous to talk about generous admission.
Well, you're doing great. You're doing a really good job. Well, the exciting thing is that a generous admission is actually a big reason as to why we are going to be launching a whole new thing here very shortly.
Oh, wow, yeah.
We haven't even talked about this a single time except you and I have.
Yes.
So, but this is one of those things that we have specifically been like, how can we expand this? How can we give more based on what we're getting? Here's what we came up with. So
yeah.
Keep your eye out for that. Keep your ears open.
Oh, is that a hint?
Huh?
I don't think it actually is. Oh, because of
we can't hear anything.
Okay, Casey's Casey Clapp,
Alex Croson.
We did it again, eh?
What a fun time! What a fun episode!
This was a great episode.
Yeah, this is a good one. I really enjoyed it.
Can I give a little secret behind the scenes secret?
Yeah, you know, Allie Ward does this. If you listen to the end of every episode,
she gives a little behind the scenes.
Gives you a little secret, not a behind the scenes, just a secret.
Well, here's a secret. This is my first episode on my new ADHD medication.
Oh, God. And the episode. For those of you who don't know, he was diagnosed with ADD. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening to Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Aloha.
Bye, everyone. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.